Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 376.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we are recording before the GOP debate, so we can't talk about it. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and don't worry, if anything noteworthy happens on that debate, I'll let you know. You save yourselves. And instead, watch literally anything else. Today, we are going to look at a question of assholery. We're also going to discuss the partisan divide on life expectancy in America, and we'll talk about the Senate's new dress code. Today, oh folks, the panel today, I can't, it's so good, it's such a phenomenal panel. We are joined now, you've heard her on the show before, we had a little hiatus for no reason at all. Well, she also like moved, she had a whole set of experiences in between. Apparently she wasn't just cryogenically frozen from one Fake the Nation appearance to the next, which is what I assume is what happens to all of our panelists. But she is a writer, she's a podcast host, you've seen her handiwork all over podcasting and the radio world. It is the wonderful Akilah Hughes.
Thank you so much for having me, Negan. Good morning.
Oh my God, so great to have you. And it's Nagin, which is
Nagin. Oh no.
No, and you know what? Truly everybody, like, it's the hardest two syllables for most of Americans. And
well,
that's what.
Great to see you, Nagin. Okay. It's morning on the West Coast. Forgive
No, there it is. Also, syllables go in the other direction on the West Coast. And so that's,
yeah, totally.
That probably explains
that. Can't read out here. So.
We are also joined now. He's also been on the show before. Mm-hmm. He's been on even live shows of Fake the Nation before. He's one of my favorite comedic writers. And
I know you can't just say comedian, can you? It just doesn't track.
Is this a common problem for all of us, or it's just me? Yeah.
Well, comedians tend to be
you
funny.
You are a comedian.
You know? They tend to be. They
but, like,
tend to be
do,
funny on purpose.
No.
I'm more inspired wry chuckles.
I think
humorous
no,
is
think,
what they tend
I think
to say.
Your problem is that you do the range of entertainment in such a way that comedian feels reductive.
May I swear on your podcast?
Absolutely.
You have identified it perfectly. My brand is fucked. No one knows what.
This
no
man, whose brand is not only
the brand
fucked,
is fucked,
he is also host of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Right.
He's about to go
Hard
on
to
tour
say.
With that podcast. The tour is called Van Freaks Roadshow. And You should obviously be getting your tickets. It is just watching him live is one of the most fun things. I've had the pleasure of being able to watch him live. So fucking fun.
Thank you.
Brand is fucked. It is the one and only John Hodgman.
Thank you so much, Nigel. That's so nice of you to say. The website is vanfreaksroadshow.com for tickets and details. This is the Judge John Hodgman show live, celebrating our love for both Antiques Roadshow and the Mitsubishi Delica Japanese Market Only Adventure Van.
Are you literally going to be taking a van from city to city?
No, we wish that we could. They're hard to find.
Yeah.
It's an obsession of my co-host, Jesse Thorne's, these Japanese adventure vans called Mitsubishi Delicas. But in Madison, Wisconsin, we have one listener who has one. They're bringing it to the show. And if you come to any of our shows with a Mitsubishi Delica,
what happens?
I will get in your van. That's my promise to you.
That's it? You're not going to give like a free gift or like some swag?
Well, I'm just, whatever happens in the van will be between us.
Okay.
I'm just saying, get yourself a Delica if you want to find
you
out.
Folks, you heard it here first.
Bring a weird van
to John Hodgman's show. He'll get in it and then who knows what
not
happens.
Not any weird van. Not any weird van.
Oh, it has to be, it has to be a Mitsubishi.
A Mitsubishi Delica adventure
By the way, this
van,
is the first time I've ever heard of such a van. That said, I don't I have to be honest, I'm not a van connoisseur. I knew you thought that I was. And I think that
you're
listeners probably thought,
van,
oh, Nagin, you mean the van connoisseur?
Yeah.
Vanasseur.
One of the greatest experiences in my life was we were doing some moving, so I had to rent a van to move some furniture around, yeah. And we had it for a week one summer.
Yeah.
Actually, a month. And it was literally a white windowless van. Best experience was picking up our children from summer camp in that white windowless van, just sitting there in that white windowless van, idling menacingly, waiting for children to emerge from the summer camp.
Yeah. You painted free candy on the side.
Yeah, that's right.
That was, folks, one of John Hodgman's greatest experiences of his entire life, is I believe how you phrased it.
Well, I don't have much life left to me because you keep me in this cryogenic tube between appearances. So every now and then you let me out to see my family as well as to do episodes of the podcast. So it's very nice to be back and to see you.
Folks, before we get into the show, none of that was the show. For the record. So right. Please keep, as you're listening to this, I want you to redact everything you just heard. It does not count as the show. Before we get into it, please go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad because for as little as $4 a month, you can get bonus episodes of the show. And in those bonus episodes, we throw caution to the wind. We're just so wild. We just asked the question on one episode, can you be a housewife if you don't want children? Huh? Can you?
Yes.
We also did an episode. Look, Hodgman, no spoilers, okay? No fucking spoilers.
I had a 50-50 shot.
We also did an episode where we asked what topics are off limits with friends. That's not a 50. That's a whole two.
Where do I wade into these questions and enjoy the answers?
The enjoyment of those answers is at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Again, that's patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Thank you so much to everyone who's been supporting the show. You're so delightful. And then the other thing I wanted to let you guys know is that we're going to dip our dirty feet into the recapping waters yet again. And this time we will be recapping The Golden Bachelor. I know it doesn't make sense, but Fake the Nation is actually going to be recognizing the existence of reality TV for the very first time. What's extra special about this recap series is that I basically have never watched a full season of any reality show. And it's possible I've never watched a full episode of a single reality TV show. So for me to talk about this is insane, but in a good way. We'll be recapping two episodes at a time, so we'll post a new episode every 2 weeks starting, I believe it is, next Friday.
Next Friday, October 6th.
Next Friday,
which
October
Bachelor
6th.
Is this?
The Golden Bachelor.
Akilah, do you know about this?
Yeah, it's when it's like some seniors who want to find love in the twilight of their lives.
It's
get together.
Yeah, when those seniors be fucking. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, from the previews, a lot of these seniors are pretty hot.
Where was my agent on this one? I mean, I'm a happily married monogamous person, but
there's
still a strike going on.
I've met your wife, and I gotta be honest, she can do better.
Oh.
Wow.
I don't disagree.
I'm kidding. You're the best.
Is she
Hodgman.
On The Golden Bachelor? Oh, she hasn't been around for a while.
She could be a contestant. No, she's too young for The Golden Bachelor. Here we go. Let us get into it. Now that I've insulted everyone, Akilah, yours is coming soon. Your just blanket insult. Let's get into it with topic number one. So we're going to start with something that doesn't have grave political import to the country. And we are going to focus on whether or not someone is an asshole. We read an Am I the Asshole post on Reddit. And the scenario was thus. This lady has to go to her sister-in-law's wedding. And this sister-in-law has designed her dream wedding with very strict dress code that involves black tie and floor-length gowns on the ladies.
And long sleeves.
And long sleeves, which I thought was a very interesting addition. Right. Long sleeve, floor-length gowns. I guess at the time of this post, which was very recently, it was very
21
hot.
Days ago.
21 days ago. Thank you so much.
Am I the asshole?
Enthusiast. I assume no one does the reading, which is what. Oh, but you.
Oh no,
I'm
on. That's all I read.
Okay.
All I read is the Am I the Asshole subreddit, to my great shame. Not. I have a pile of novels and nonfiction books next to my bed.
Of course, yes.
To the ceiling.
Yeah.
That threaten my life because they're going to fall on me because all I'm doing is scrolling my favorite collection of short stories written by the most unreliable narrators since Humbert Humbert. I love them.
In really questionable prose, just like not the best.
It's just,
prose.
It's just, it's bananas. But go on.
So she has I'm to aware. Go. Okay, so you, as you know, she has to go to this sister-in-law's wedding. The dress code is really serious. And this lady does not want to abide by the dress code because she is 34 weeks pregnant and this wedding takes place in the South where it's still very hot at the time of this wedding. And she's getting a lot of guff from family members for being selfish. She's threatening not going. Is she the asshole for making this a problem, for not, you know, for possibly not going to her sister-in-law's wedding because of the dress code?
No.
No.
I think that it's incredibly presumptuous. First of all, going to a wedding, like, I mean, I don't know if this person is based in the South, but like if you're already traveling, that's way more of a commitment monetarily than like most people should have to do. Like, especially when the divorce rate is so high, I just feel like it's not like you get that money back. So I think, you know, in the words of a canceled Kanye, my presence is a present, kiss my ass. Like, I just don't think you have to do anything extra, especially when you're pregnant. Like, I had a boot on my foot this summer because I had a bunion surgery, super sexy. And like, if there was a dress code for anything, that's out the window. Because I am in rare condition, rare form. Like, I think it's shitty to expect, like, a dress code to that degree anyway. Like, a color, fine. That's it. That's what you get. A color and a style. Like, it can be formal and green, but it can't be long sleeves
and floor waist. Length. It's also just right. really weird. Because...
And it's not merely floor length. It's an outdoor wedding.
That's the other thing.
It's like ground dust length.
Yeah, dust length.
Right. So just pick up the dirt with your dress. I also just don't understand why it would be long sleeve in the summer.
Yeah. Because this because the bride is dumb.
Yeah, yeah. Because the bride is dumb.
I mean, also, like, it's, why does the bride care so much what other people are wearing? Isn't it your day? Your wedding.
By the way, OP, as we say in Am I the Asshole circles, original poster, the person who's posting this, who's the woman who's 34 weeks pregnant. Yeah. She isn't a member of the wedding party.
Oh, right.
She's a guest.
So it's not, she's just fam.
All of the guests are getting these instructions
from
the bride.
Right.
Which is black tie, floor length, long sleeve gowns, which outdoors in Kentucky. Mm. No, I mean, as many, many smart respondents posted in the comments, black tie and evening gowns for a daytime wedding, that's a big thumbs down.
That's a thumbs down.
That's stupid.
Down.
Yeah. For also, it's Kentucky. Yeah. Like, you're lucky that people are wearing shoes. And I can say that because I'm from there.
Wow. Exactly.
I'll be honest.
I just want to say, we didn't say that. Akilah said that.
And I'm from Kentucky, so I know.
Even if you were to adhere to the most formal of formal wear standards for a daytime wedding, black tie and evening gowns are not it. Notice the word evening. So, yeah.
I also, can I add a little like interesting thing to the mix, which is that she's 25. The woman who's 34 weeks pregnant is 25 years old. The sister-in-law who's getting married is 36 years old, which she was, so she thought that she would be getting married before the brother. I think like age-wise, she was like maybe technically supposed to get married before.
And guess what, Nagin? Did you dig into the comments like I did?
I read them. I don't know if I dug in, but go. What were you going to say?
She was married before. This is her second wedding.
Oh, no,
wedding.
I didn't dig in
second
that
marriage.
Far. Wait,
yeah,
this
feel
is
like
the
that's
second
even
wedding?
Red flag.
Yeah.
Like, I'm coming in jeans.
Oh, my God. You cannot you cannot have a serious dress code for a second wedding.
Yeah. No, I'm coming in like John Fetterman to this wedding.
Yeah. I'm actually hanging at the door just like text you when it's over.
Yeah. You know what? I'm sending a drone. I'm not going.
Live stream on Zoom. I'm wearing the same t-shirt I'm wearing now.
Do you remember
that's
that
like when my best friend got married when we were in our very early 20s and I went to it and the person whom I'm married to who deserves better than me she was not married to me then and she is always forever a whole
by
human
the way,
being
that
in her own
entire
right is not defined
compliment,
by me.
That entire comment was designed for her to hear so like then you have to go home and then like play this part of the podcast.
It's too bad she doesn't listen to podcasts.
She'll never know.
The point is, she couldn't attend this particular wedding. Let's just say this person's name is John Doe. Like, okay. we were 22, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't attend, she couldn't afford to go. She was working or something, couldn't get off work, whatever.
Yeah.
Her mother said, don't worry about it. There'll be other John Doe weddings. And there have been.
So that friend of yours
exactly.
did get
I'll
remarried?
Catch you next year.
Oh my God.
At least once.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I do think it's interesting. I mean, like, yeah, I want to say the second wedding thing, I did not know this. It did not dig far enough into the comments.
Yeah.
That adds another layer to me. And I don't like that. I also don't like what she said, which is she said to the pregnant woman, the bride said to the pregnant woman, so she freaked out at me and told me I was being incredibly selfish and that, quote, for once, it isn't about me and my fucking baby.
Oh, you know what, sister, a future sister-in-law, you changed my mind. Now I definitely want to come to this wedding.
Exactly.
Also, this sounds like a good time.
Literally, the dress code is about me and my baby.
That's the problem. Because she doesn't want to be hot and pregnant. And I will say the one time I skipped a wedding, I was like 8 months pregnant and I just couldn't, and my husband went and I didn't go.
The one time you skipped a wedding?
Like the one time I skipped a wedding that I really shouldn't have. It was like one of his family members and I didn't want to, but it was just, I was so physically not able that, I think this is a great chance for you to skip a wedding, basically.
Absolutely.
Totally. Yeah. And you can one of the last times you can use your baby as an excuse, I guess.
I know. Like, you cannot use pregnancy as an excuse forever. Now that you have this one excuse, you don't even need to talk about the dress code. Just be like, I'm too pregnant. Sorry. And that's it. Like, exactly.
The original poster posted pictures of three dresses that she sent to the bride for the bride's approval.
I didn't like them.
Tell me why.
They were just like a little
muted to the bride, by the way. The bride was like, no, and this isn't about your fucking baby for once. Which was an escalation.
I would have been, if I was this bride, I would have been like, oh my God, those look lovely, great. Like, obviously,
yeah, but
we're different
people. What did you think about those dresses yourself?
I didn't think they weren't
fetching. Right. Yeah, they weren't, no.
No. Right?
They weren't.
And maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is this fucking pregnant lady doesn't have good taste.
Maybe that's it. I mean, I will say that those dresses, they look fine and they were probably appropriate for an afternoon garden party.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably a lot more comfortable for a pregnant person to wear.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the most important thing.
Also, they're more important, more appropriate for just gardening. Hey, folks, let me know who is the asshole here. I feel like we all came heavily down on the side of the bride is the asshole, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm open to other interpretations.
There is no other interpretation. I apologize. As an expert on this subject, I will tell you not only is the OP completely NTA, not the asshole, but so NTA that it got cross posted in the Am I the Asshole? What's the word I'm looking for? It's not a subreddit. Am I the Asshole Tribute Reddit? Am I the Angel
Reddit? Jesus.
Where they repost people
Christ.
Who are clearly not assholes, who are just looking for validation.
Yeah.
Which is itself kind of asshole.
Maybe she suffers from a little insecurity, and then also maybe she needs a little bit more design savvy in her life, for the record.
Yeah, but when someone tells you a future sister-in-law is the case here, right?
Yeah.
This isn't about you and your fucking baby for once. Ooh, that's a clarifying moment.
Yeah,
you never have to see that person again
in
your life.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that she's getting married for the second time, to be honest. Like, shocking. Really.
All right. Well, you know what, folks? We are going to move on so that we can hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue chatting. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Let us move on to topic number two. Okay. We read an incredible piece in Politico called America's Surprising Partisan Divide on Life Expectancy by Colin Woodard. It was amazing, and it makes the case that life expectancy ends up being basically all about the policy environment that people live in. Now, I'm going to explain what that means in a second, but first, I want to ask about the literal title of the piece, which again is America's Surprising Partisan Divide on Life Expectancy. Was this
quote, surprising to you that there's that the country could be divided up, life expectancy could be reflected so heavily in partisanship?
No. Well, no.
I mean, after COVID, I just feel like, you know, there's all of these studies that have shown that Republicans were more likely to die because they would follow a person like Donald Trump, who's telling you in the middle of a pandemic, don't wear a mask, don't get a vaccine, even though I'm the one who asked for the vaccine. So a lot more of them have died and had shorter life expectancy. So I guess, like, on the concept, I would have assumed everybody wanted to stay alive, but that has been proven false in my own lifetime. So I kind of am not surprised by this at all.
Yeah, Akhil is absolutely right. And, you know, political team affiliation totally outweighed people's desire to live.
Yes. You know. It's so bizarre. Okay, well, and then this piece basically reaffirms that with so much incredible data. Now, it's a little bit of a weird one to talk about, but I'm going to just point out a few things that they said in the piece and get your reactions. What they did is they divided the country in areas that make more sense than state boundaries. They divided the country in areas based on original settlement of those areas.
Well, not original settlement.
Oh, yeah, not original. Sorry.
Not really original.
Sorry. The wildly absolute correction. Yes, the colonized settlements of those areas and then how those have played out over, you know, the last couple of centuries. And then so, for example, Greater New York City area is called the New Netherlands. The Deep South, for example, the Deep South was founded by English slave lords from Barbados who didn't care about shared prosperity, says the article. And then the Puritans came and settled Yankeedom, which is kind of like all
that's
of
my,
the...
That's my people, by your, the way.
It's Hodgman's people.
I'm a
it's
masshole.
Kind of like the north, the like, yeah, Massachusetts and then middle
Who's the author of this piece?
Some person. Some like very nice person.
Okay, well, we don't know.
I've never met them.
And then, for example, with Puritans... the Puritan founders of Yankeedom thought that God had chosen them to create a more perfect society, and it made the average person materially a lot better off in Yankeedom than it did in the Deep South.
Unless you were a woman accused of being a witch, that's true.
Yes. What we're talking about...
Exactly. Absolutely. That's the crossover.
Yeah.
No, we're talking in bold strokes.
These are definitely bold strokes. Just that, like, the like overarching ethics... by which these regions were founded in colonial United States.
The colonizers of New England had a very different set of cultural and ethical principles that were monstrous at a baseline,
yes,
but were distinct from the colonizers of the Deep South.
That were also monstrous.
And then those who then spread to what this dude calls Appalachiaville or something. He has different names for everything. I felt like I was reading an incredible
fantasy novel. It was actually mildly annoying because I was like, I don't have time to get into this universe.
No, there was, these
it's
are the ones
Greater
I remember.
Greater Appalachia.
Yankeedom, yeah. New Netherlands, Tidelands, which is like.
Tidewater.
Oh, Tidewater. That's Virginia and Maryland where they tried to, he said the lesser sons of noble European English families tried to replicate English semi-feudalism or whatever. Then the Deep South, then the left coast, which is California.
Just the coast, literally, and the Pacific Northwest.
And there was
the
a whole map and everything. I thought I was reading some Game of Thrones. I was really enjoying it.
It was like, this is District 14.
Yeah, exactly.
This was a true alternate history.
This
did have, and the names really felt like Hunger Games-y. That's right.
But you know something? Yeah. I do think that this guy who wrote this interesting article, whose name no one knows and shall never be remembered, and who also wrote a whole book about this, his alternate universe of the United
Colin
States.
Colin Woodard.
All right. We got, what's the name again?
Colin Woodard.
Sounds a lot like VanFreaksRoadshow.com. Anyway, I don't know why I'm plugging this guy's book so hard, but I did feel like, oh yeah, he's onto something. Because what was interesting to me was like, if you compare the poorest rural, Like at first I thought this was a city rural thing, right? Because population density, it tends to track with more, you know, liberal cosmopolitan populations. Yeah. Also, there are more hospitals there, you know, and you have more access. Sure. And typically they tend to have more social services than rural communities.
Yeah.
That might just simply be have fewer social services because they're harder to access. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But his point of view is like the poorest county in the state of Maine compared to the poorest county in the state of, I don't know what it was, Kentucky or something like that. Even in the poorest county in the state of Maine, they have longer life expectancy.
Yes.
And they are rural as friends, as they say. You know what I mean? Rural as feces out there. And that and that tracked with me because what I thought was interesting was that there is a spirit, even in Maine, where I spend part of the year, which is very, very rural, and lots of it is very, very conservative, right on top of each other. You know, when that's the thing that nobody saw until 2016 when those Trump signs came out. Like, oh, I didn't realize that all of these neighbors want me to die, basically.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Or like, don't believe in my full humanhood or whatever it is that you learned when your neighbor put out a Trump sign. But the truth is that, you know, in Maine, someone can be completely, completely full on Trump. And yet, if your car is in a ditch, they will get you out of that ditch.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Where I feel like that's part of the New England.
But also
thing.
The just that, you know, okay, so here's another way of looking at that to give you a clear example. If you compare the richest people in the Deep South.
Yeah.
To the poorest people in New Netherlands, which is the greater New York City area, the poorest
also,
people.
Also, a miniseries coming to Peacock.
The poorest people in New Netherlands live longer, even though they're poor. So, if you're very rich, but in the Deep South, you're not going to live as long than if you're very
poor. Because there is an intrinsic and team-affiliated resistance to taxed social services in these red states.
Yep.
And the poll quote in there was that poor rural whites are against social services for poor people because they think poor people are non-white people.
Right.
Yeah.
So
and therefore on the wrong team and fuck them.
Yeah. And then constantly promote things that are against their own interests, which, I mean, you know, we've heard this a lot.
Do you know how many noseless people there are in the rural Deep South because of all the face fighting that's going on?
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's also just like, I think that the Deep South is like, I mean, going back to like after the Civil War and Reconstruction, like they weren't running to create cities. These are white people who literally outsourced all of their labor.
Right.
And so you have a real reliance on cars and large food portions and, you know what I mean? And watching Fox News, which means sitting in a lazy boy for most of your life. Like, I don't think that the things that keep people young are appreciated in the South. So, like,
but also,
that is obviously a generalization, but like, growing up there, and I just spent a week back at home in Kentucky, and I'm like, yeah, you can't even walk. I was at a hotel that shared a parking lot with a grocery store, and the people who worked at the hotel were like, you're gonna walk over there?
Right.
This is what I'm talking about.
So but it's even, like, I think but that here's the interesting thing. It's not even just because, like, you could look at the left coast, for example, and say those people also have a large reliance on cars and they also eat at, you know, Olive Garden. But the difference is, and there's two huge factors that end up making this life expectancy number so interesting. One is, did they have a ban on cigarettes? Which a lot of the Deep South and Greater Appalachia, I guess, don't.
Yeah, you can still smoke inside in Kentucky.
Is that true, Akilah? Because I was like, that was shocking to me because I sort of thought it was sort of nationwide at this point.
No, I mean, if you go to New Orleans, you can still smoke inside some places. Like, it's,
the South
is kind of like, go to the smoking section of like the whole restaurant.
Right.
I can't smell my food.
So that's apparently that's a huge factor. Is this ban on cigarette smoke and the taxation on tobacco, and then the other big factor is literally like is when Obamacare opened up
Medicaid expansion, right?
Like, did they expand their Medicaid, and states that didn't do it are have these lower life expectancy, even though they can. It's funded entirely by the federal government. Why wouldn't you? But many states,
because a black person said it was a good idea.
Exactly.
So really, like, that's really the beginning and end of it.
Wild
team affiliation. It's really gross.
Yeah, it's
really gross. I had a friend who, he does a podcast named Dan Sinker, and he talks about how politics in America is really like wrestling in the like 80s and 90s, where it's like, it doesn't even matter that this is like barbaric and people are like getting hit in the face with a chair and bleeding out. Like, your guy has to win.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
what's the name of that podcast, Dan Sinker's podcast?
I think it's called Says Who Weekly, but that might be someone else's podcast.
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to hit you up with another just interesting fact from the piece, which is that in the new Netherlands, again, Greater New York City, despite its density, diversity, and income inequalities, and contrary to the urban hellhole rhetoric of the extreme right, it's one of the healthiest places to live in the United States, with an overall life expectancy of 80.9 years. Woo, woo! Just wanted to give ourselves a pat on the back there.
Nice work, New Netherlands.
Yeah. Yes, go off, New Netherlands. You're doing it. I mean, I think it's just kind of obvious to me. I mean, they obviously take advantage of social programs in cities because the benefit is like easy to see immediately.
Yeah.
But also, like, I can't overstate the amount of like walking that you have to do in all of these places. Like, it just isn't a place where you can sit in the car all day and eat your calories like from on the road. Like, I don't even know where a good drive-through is in Brooklyn. Like, it's just different.
Well, and I think that what you said, Akilah, is really true. It's like, like, politics has become like professional wrestling. You want your person to win. And when you have a particular politician who has almost literally turned politics into professional wrestling, just absolute shows of dominance, theatrics, accusing people of ridiculous things. Who cares about policy at that point? Like, there's no policy position that Donald Trump is ever going to take that is going to change his followers' minds. Like, his whole dinging Ron DeSantis on the 6 weeks abortion ban is like, is that going to have him lose evangelicals? Evangelicals don't give a fuck about that. They're like, oh, no, we want to win. We want to win. And bonus points if it makes everyone else angry and sad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of his advisors just released a book, and one of the excerpts was that Donald Trump was so vain that the reason he was so anti-masks was because the strings on the masks would wipe off his like fake tanner.
Wow.
And it would look really apparent. And so, like, because of that fact, like, one person pointed out that you could see it, he was like, no masks. And I'm like, is that true? Who's to say? But like, if that's the level of policymaking,
right.
I'm not
exactly
surprised people are dying when they're like 45. Like, I get it.
It's just the saddest thing to me because, you know, as we go into this election season, like, yeah, policy is no fun, and figuring out what levers to push and pull to get good outcomes for people's health or to lower inflation, it's complicated. It's no fun. But if you have a fucking geek show on the other side, like, the people who go to Trump rallies have a good time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's awful.
Totally.
It's awful, and it's monstrous, and it's horrible for democracy, and it makes other people feel afraid, and that's the point. Mm-hmm. But I wish our side could have fun, you know?
I kept saying that in 2020. I feel like we should have more fun. Democracy should be more fun. Engaging it should be fun. Election day should be fun. Like the idea you should pair your voting with like what kind of pastry do you like to get after you vote to treat yourself. Like, there should just, this should be fun. It should be fun on both sides. I do not want to begrudge other people for their fun. Like, let this be fun.
I'll tell you one thing that's fun that I've learned. And I think it's going to have real policy effect. Hmm. Striking is fun.
Oh, it is. Agreed. You know? Yes.
And we're recording this a day or two after a tentative deal has been made between the WGA and the AMPTP or whatever they're called. The fake group that was created by FACOs. for the studios to negotiate for them. And, you know, we're in, the SAG-AFTRA strike is still going on, and we're in the midst of this United Auto Workers strike. And it's like, this is a great moment for labor organization in this country.
Oh, it is, yeah.
And I think people realize, like, yeah, it is fun to get on the streets and say, fuck you to billionaires who have really had their way with us for the past couple of decades.
That feels fun to me. Also just feels like a reunion. It's oddly jubilant picketing. So anyways, highly recommend if you're in a union to do your strike authorizations when you can. Yeah. All right. Well, let us move on.
Also, you're walking around, right, Akilah? It's good exercise.
Oh, there it is. Akilah's walking around.
I've seen all of the posts of like the WGA where they're like, you know, we have our group in Cincinnati. We have our group in, that's like five people. But in LA and New York, it's like thousands upon thousands. So I do think that just like the need to walk, that sidewalks generally are a thing that exists in New Netherlands or whatever.
In the New Netherlands, that's what we call ourselves, yes.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let me know. What do you think? Check out this piece. I thought it was just a phenomenal set of data points, really well delivered. So check it out. It's in Politico magazine.
I need someone to make the coat of arms and the mottos for all the different realms of alternate universe United States.
Right. Yeah. House Tidewater.
Exactly.
House New Netherlands.
Winter is coming.
All right, let us move on to topic number three. Oh, folks. There's a change in the senatorial dress code. Before last week, men had to wear a suit and a tie, and women had to wear pantsuits or dresses.
Floor-length gowns
and long sleeves.
Especially when you're pregnant.
But everything has changed. This ain't your granddaddy's Senate. Oh, no. These guys can wear capri pants now if they want. They can wear a t-shirt. They can wear jeans. Or prepare yourselves. They can wear a hoodie. Now, I mean, I don't know.
First of all, slight collection. This is still my granddaddy's Senate.
Exactly. I'm like, Mitch McConnell has literally been in the Senate since before I was born.
I think I read somewhere in the article of median age, it's either the mean or the median age is 65. It's like, this is a gerontocracy.
Very fucking old, yeah.
And that's like the oldest people who ever lived in the South, remember? So, so that's like, that's their God.
Yeah, I mean, the
expectancy in Deep South and Greater Appalachia. It's wild.
Yeah, I think what you really want to do is look at the comparison of life expectancy between people in rural red states and their congressional delegations. Because they're congressional delegations definitely have health care.
Well, they live in D.C. most of the time.
Well, exactly. They're in Tidewater.
Yeah, Tidewater.
And they have health care. Crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, Hodgman, I think you could go to Senate looking like how you look right now.
Thank you very much. Legit. I'm wearing some. You want to hear all my brands?
No free ads.
If you want to know, subscribe to my Substack. I'll tell you what you're wearing, what I'm wearing today. I think
But what do we think of this fucking dress code?
Well, it's because of John Fetterman.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. He is the 34 weeks pregnant bride. I just can't. It's so hot. I just can't do it. What are we voting yes and no all the time? I'm not. Yeah. I can't. It's too hot.
I think it's so amazing. It's one of I never would have seen Chuck Schumer loosening the dress code for John Fetterman. I think that's good.
Because Chuck John Schumer Fetterman is like pretty chill dude. Ultimately,
yeah.
I mean, you know.
Also, he wants to wear athleisure in the Senate, right?
Yeah, he's like, can I get my men's tights for running?
He wants to wear
if everyone's allowed to look cozy, can I look cozy?
He wants to wear Zara joggers on the Senate floor.
John Fetterman is absolutely someone we should be making an accommodation for in the Senate. And this is a incredible accommodation, right? Because John Fetterman is wearing shorts and hoodies in doing Senate business.
Yeah.
And that is a big change, because not only is that not a suit, it's also the traditional February winter attire of anyone in New England. That's what you wear yeah. when you're walking to Dunkin' Donuts.
Wait, do you still wear
weather.
Shorts?
Of course you do.
Are you serious?
It's bananas.
Oh yeah, you gotta get those white legs.
Yeah. Guy, is this like exactly. is this a Yankeedom thing?
He's
I
from Pennsylvania.
I don't like it.
He's from Pennsylvania, but I know that look.
You know, I went to school in upstate New York at Cornell, and there were a series of, we'll call them gentlemen, who would wear flip-flops in the middle of fucking yeah. winter, and it yeah. made me want to throw up. Like, I yeah. hate that. I feel like that's a, I feel like that's a sister look to the shorts in winter.
Well, just a fun anecdote. I have a niece and nephew. I have several nephews, but I remember they moved to DC from Seattle. Like, my sister works for a lot of like cool big nonprofits or whatever. So they moved to DC and they were like, I think my nephew was maybe 8, and he had this theory that white people didn't get cold because they were the only people he ever saw in winter with their legs and like feet out. He was like, they just can't. Like,
it's when I was in Ithaca, I really was startled, shocked, and dismayed by the amount of legs and feet that I saw in the dead of winter.
But
it didn't
make
any sense
restrictive.
To me.
Yeah, but I want to draw a slight distinction. I want to split a Caucasian hair here okay. in terms of this culture that we're describing.
That's why we have you on the show.
Extremely fine Caucasian thin hair.
Gentle wave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is that the people that you are, John Fetterman is not rocking the style of the people you are describing.
Okay.
What my old friend who's been married more than once, John Doe's little brother, would call Teva wearing assholes.
Yeah, that is,
this
yes.
is collegiate Teva wearing.
Yes, that's who they were.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and they're disgusting.
I'm talking about the guy, the guys in Greenfield, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. who are walking from the Rotary to the Dunkin' Donuts in 25 degree weather, wearing a yes. hoodie and shorts.
Right, okay, yeah.
Because their Civic won't start. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And John Fetterman is not from New England. He's from, you know, central Pennsylvania, but he is like, he's right to dress that way. Like, one of the critiques is that it shows that dressing down suggests that they're not serious about doing the people's business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the people don't dress that way. And right. nothing the Senate has been doing, and particularly the House of Representatives, shows in any way that they're serious about doing the people's business as we go into this shutdown. John Fetterman understands that people dress this way. He is also absolutely, you know, I like him, particularly because he's trying to reconnect with rural voters that we lost to the Republicans, to the devastation of our country. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And absolutely. And it's also good because it drives Republicans out of their minds that this yeah. guy is out there showing his knees. I love it.
Yeah. It's interesting coming because during the same week that this happened, revelations came out that Lauren
the Book
Boebert,
of Revelations. I thought that was happening. Now I understand. Okay, right.
Yeah,
4 days of rain, plague of locusts. The world is burning.
But this was the same week that Lauren Boebert was fondling people in a theater for the, what was the show she was
Beetlejuice.
Watching?
It was Beetlejuice, the musical.
You know the children's essentially musical Beetlejuice, the sexiest musical you could go to.
I know,
it's the most vapingest, gropingest musical around.
Yeah.
It's what it says on all the posters.
I was very recently at Disneyland and I did my internship there in like 2008, Disney World, but same company. Mm. And they had something called the Disney look. And so like they didn't hire people who had any tattoos. And like I feel like every day was like a struggle to figure out what to do with my hair so that I didn't get sent home from work. And now everybody has shaved sides, full sleeves of tattoos. And it's like, I just don't think you can stop that sort of thing. Like it's so acceptable now that it's like, why would we be like, well, Lincoln wore a suit. I'm like, well, Lincoln got murdered in a theater. When was the last time that happened? Okay, don't ask. my point is people have piercings and tattoos and stuff now. And so I mean, it seems like the boomers are never going to die. They're all living in New Netherlands, I guess. They're just never going out. But like for the younger generation that is supposed to be taking power at some point, that is not strange at all. Like, I don't think I've ever had a boss that wasn't wearing jeans and like Birkenstocks and a long sleeve shirt that was telling me what to do.
Like, absolutely right.
It just doesn't exist.
I will. Okay, I'm going to make just a last ditch argument here for outfits. I mean, just for like, I guess decorum is what the Senate was going for before. My personal feeling is I love it when people wear outfits. So I would like to impose a dress code that's not, that's like, look cool.
Yes.
Don't say that. Then we get Kirsten Sinema in those like clown outfits. That's what I'm talking about.
No, be specific, okay? But that's what I'm saying. I would much rather see Kirsten Sinema in those clown outfits than like Kirsten Sinema in a pair of sweatpants. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see an outfit.
The pandemic. Like, I feel like the fact that any of us are doing anything is so
I'm over the pandemic. I'm over sweatpants.
COVID
I'm
is
over,
eating
I
right
want
now.
Hard we pants. Need, I no. want strong waist that'll fucking
absolutely not.
Cinch in your lungs. I want to see people mildly uncomfortable but looking cool.
There's a lot that was revealed about the how our institutions were not working.
Yep.
During the pandemic, totally we learned a lot about the how all of our institutions were corrupt and venal, and often on purpose, and we had to do a lot of reexamination. And unfortunately, we have not made enough changes based on what we've learned. But sweatpants are okay. I mean, that's, I'm going to say that's fine. Sweatpants are okay. I think he could. I could John Fetterman dress up the hoodie and the shorts a little bit.
Yeah, could he do a little
maybe
something?
Have those running tights under the shorts? You know, something that feels like it's floor length.
But I mean, you look at some of the incredibly garbage suits that a lot of these senators are wearing that don't fit right.
Well, that's
everyone
my,
could
my
use
thing
a
is
look-over.
I want everyone to get a fashion consult.
Yes.
Okay.
That's I mean, our tax dollars aren't going to anything that matters anyway.
I don't care if they, like, and like, what if Fetterman had like a cute shorts on suit ensemble?
You know I don't know. I mean, I think we have to remember like what he's this in guy Bermuda. Looks like. I just feel like that's not his look. Like, that's a good look, but like, I think that's a strange look. Like, for him.
I think
I'm imagining like a khaki sort of like safari.
Yeah,
short.
Yeah. And oh, see, that sounds fun.
Is that a good look for him? You know, I got to see the pictures.
Look, I think he's more versatile than we're giving him credit for. Okay. Look, fashion wise, I think he could pull it off. All right.
And
I don't
can
know.
I also just shout out Gisele Fetterman, whom I also am a huge fan of.
Yeah.
When she was, and maybe everyone knows this, but when she was, he was Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania and she was the Second Lady of Pennsylvania. She insisted everyone just call her SLOP, S-L-O-P, Second Lady of Pennsylvania. I was like, "This, we need more
That's
of this.
That's hilarious.
This is at, like, whether it looks like John Fetterman or anybody who is under 70, we need more of this in the Senate."
That's hilarious. Yeah. I also want to point out that the last time they changed the dress code was July of 2017 when Paul Ryan faced backlash because he was barring a female reporter from entering because she wore a sleeveless dress. So he changed the sleeveless dress part. Which is crazy to think
she wasn't invited to Paul Ryan's wedding either.
Folks, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think of the dress code in the Senate? I'm so curious to hear your thoughts. Do you miss the decorum or are you into the Fetterman look, Fetterman chic?
And he's doing it on purpose. He is absolutely trolling them.
He made this great joke, which is like, if wearing a suit means that we can come to an agreement, like not shut down the government or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's very funny about the whole thing.
I bet he would wear a suit great too.
I mean, come on, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's a man of many possible looks.
Tall monarch.
All right, and that is the end of the show. Oh my God, what an incredible panel the two of you were. We laughed. We also continued to laugh. We didn't cry, which is a big problem for this fucking episode, but we did laugh.
We laughed, and then we took pauses to breathe, and then laughed again.
And then laughed again. And then now the two of you will be returning to a cryogenic chamber where nothing will happen in your lives until the next time.
But okay, it's fine.
I know. The whole pandemic, I'm just hearing about it.
I know. My children are grown. They're in college now. I don't even know. There is so much.
When did I get a dog? Like, what is
this? Oh, my God. Wait, can I to close the show, can I tell you guys, Hodgman, I don't know if I told you this. I've run into Hodgman's son on the streets of the East Village many times. And, no, three
he's
times.
He's a grown
like,
person
three times.
Now.
He's a grown young man. And, and I didn't recognize him the first couple of times.
Right.
Because it was just sort of out of context. And it was like, who is this? Why would I know a young man approaching? You know what I mean? He's like 18 or something.
Yeah, because we did some events together.
We did some events together.
He came along.
And so, when
he was younger and more childlike.
No, but that's true. He literally looked different the next time I saw him. Okay, but here's the more embarrassing thing. I was left at the gym. I was wearing my most nightmarish public outfit because I had just left a gym. I was sweaty. I was disgusting. But also, I was really hungry. So I bought some.
He was like, is that John Fetterman over there?
I know. I was on the John Fetterman dress code. And I was eating just like a bag of crackers, just walking down the street. And there's nothing more embarrassing than to run into
crackers.
John Hodgman's son.
Like a
crackers.
Sleeve. Yeah, what
like
are you, slamming a sleeve of saltines?
I'm so embarrassed. And then he goes, Nagin, hi, it's me, John Hodgman's son, right? And I was like, oh, God, like there's a just like crumbs coming off of my lip. And I'm like, hello, and my mouth is dry. Anyways, and I was like, oh, God, I wonder if he's going to tell his dad that I was eating crackers on the streets of
New York
City.
This is news to me. All he said to me was, it was super cool to see Nagin.
He said nothing about crackers. Are you sure he said nothing about crackers?
Absolutely not.
All right.
You heard how startled I was. I'm not that good an actor.
Well, folks, I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do while you do or do not eat crackers. where do you want to send these people, John Hodgman?
Well, every week, Jesse Thorne and I record and release... Not just record, but release a podcast called Judge John Hodgman.
Yes.
And we're going on tour. In fact, as you listen to this, we might be on tour. It's our Van Freaks Roadshow tour. Talked about it already on the podcast, vanfreaksroadshow.com. That's vanfreaksroadshow.com for tickets and details. And I also have a Substack now, which is hodgman.substack.com. It's called Secret Society. And it's an extrapolation of an old live show that I used to do called Secret Society. And what happens in Secret Society? Well... there is no secret society that I know of. Go to hodgman.substack.com and find out. But I want to know what Akilah is up to.
Akilah, where do the people of Fake the Nation find you?
I should start a Substack. You all are inspired me. But so far, I'm hanging out on Instagram at Akilah H, A-K-I-L-A-H-H. And whatever Twitter is, I'm sure it'll be a husk by the time you go and check it out. But it was Akilah, obviously, over there. Who knows? who knows what they're going to be doing in 5 minutes? But yeah, mostly just on Instagram. My stories are my new tweets. So...
folks,
check it out.
I am a follower and I enjoy it very much.
I am also a follower and I've always enjoyed Akilah. And also just make sure you follow so that you can see whatever other amazing next project she's doing that you can then listen to or watch. And you know where to find me and all the things that I do. Just a reminder, I'm going to be...
just keep an eye out for her in the East Village eating crackers.
I might be eating crackers. And I'm so embarrassed and I'm just... I don't know why I did that publicly. It's like And I'm the one who's telling John Fetterman not to fucking wear shorts. You know what I mean? What was I thinking? But when I'm not eating crackers, you can find me in the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour. I will have been, I think by the time this releases, we will have already done San Diego, but I'll be in San Francisco on Friday the 29th. And then I'll also be doing dates at the Kennedy Center.
What?
I will also be on October 3rd. I'll be at the Green Space doing the reason we're all still here. So check that out. And then also, I don't know, other things. It doesn't matter. Point is, listen.
Where could I find out if I wanted to know?
go to fucking, oh God, I guess Nagin Farsad on all of the things is what it is.
Google Nagin Farsad.
But also don't forget the Golden Bachelor recaps. Next week, we'll be dropping in your feed. Oh my God. And also patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. But what I really want to do is thank everyone who makes this show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew Maguire. Woo, woo. Yeah, and also Gabi Alter, who wrote our theme music. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. And if you have any thoughts, please send them to fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And otherwise, we'll be back in your earballs next week.
I just want to acknowledge that Nagin did that whole credit sequence off book. That was really impressive.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you.
That was great.
That was a HeadGum podcast.